Beautiful Sheridan Jobbins is here, and she's got a book out called Wish You Were Here, and it's kind of a memoir, but it's a lot more than that. But enough of me talking. Let's meet the author herself. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, put your hands together for Sheridan Jobbins.
Yay! Hey, Jono.
Hello, Sheridan. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you.
Do I call you Miss Jobbins or Sherry?
No. Oh, Cheryl, Sherry.
Yeah. So we spent a lot of time working together on kids' TV at Channel 10 in the 80s.
Yeah, you were just absolutely the rocket of that show. And
I learned a lot.
Yeah, you taught a lot too. You taught me about branding and how to.
Yeah, that's because I came out of advertising, I guess so. But how long were you on the show for?
3 years.
3 years. So you were almost on it longer than me, I think, except we were sort of on it reruns for a long time.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody was on it longer than you. I think you owned that.
Well, I don't know. It was funny. I think I actually did the show for maybe 5 years, but then Channel 10 used to run a double Wonderworld because it was a half-hour show. So there'd be one new Wonderworld and then a classic Wonderworld.
And then they'd do the summer fill-in in the country too. I was travelling out Dubbo way once and somebody rushed in saying, you're on television. And I was doing an arts program at 4 o'clock in the afternoon thinking, and it was just country reruns.
I know, yeah. It was amazing because it was, I think I was 10 years older and people were saying, oh yeah, I saw you on Wonderworld this afternoon. I'm going, really? Where is that?
Yeah, the good old days before residuals.
I think that's right. We didn't even know what the word residuals meant. Something in the garden. There's a residual down there. Oh, fantastic. I'll go and cut it later on. So when did you left Australia? You did one. What did you do after Simon Townsend's Wonderworld then?
I did a number of things. I did arts programs at the ABC for a while. So you studied the art with Andrew Saw and Billboard and,
I still see Andrew Saw.
Oh, I love him. Andrew He's Saw such a funny man. Works, so bright.
Andrew Saw works next door at Channel 10, and I think he's also involved with Amanda Keller's show in some way.
I didn't know that.
With The Living Room.
Yeah, he's Ron Saw's son as well, the great satirist. Yeah, he's a terrific guy. So I worked with him for a while, and I actually had my own show as well on Channel 10, did a kids program. It was just a hosting.
Really?
Yeah.
That was maybe when I left the country for tax reasons.
Yes, I think you were away for tax reasons.
I had to go away and change my name and
get an offshore
live in Panama. Only. You also, I remember myself and Dano, when I used to work on in a double act with Jono and Dano, we interviewed you, I think, on a drive time show when we were doing a drive time show around Australia with a filmmaker.
Yeah, with Stephen Elliott. I ran Leighton Image for a while, which is the company that made Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And afterwards, I started to work with Stephen Elliott, and we wrote some features together. He's fantastic.
He's a lovely guy.
Oh, and also hilarious. He's the most fun to work with in terms of just everyday writing by yourself is so tedious. To have somebody to bounce off. Yep. Yeah. Boing, boing. That's all we do. We bounce all day. So, we wrote Easy Virtue, which was based on an old Coward play, and it ended up with Colin Firth and Kristen Scott Thomas, and it was just the most heavenly experience. It was amazing, shot out of Britain.
So did you get that feeling that you wanted to do more of those sorts of things? I mean,
if I could live in that space forever, seriously, at the end of it, they did a sneaky wrap where we were supposed to finish filming the next day, and then they decided to can that scene, and so we wrapped at 5 o'clock the day before, and I was so bereft, I literally sat in the bath crying for 3 hours. I wouldn't go to the party with Colin Firth. I wouldn't go to the party with Kristen Scott Thomas. I just bawled my eyes out. I'd had such a good time.
Was it that thing of like a certain part of your life? It's like when anyone works on a TV show or a film, it's that kind of moment when that night comes or that afternoon comes when you've all got to say goodbye to each other and everyone goes, oh, that's all right. We'll all work again together. I always usually say, I'll see you at the reshoot. Because, it kind of makes it feel like you will see each other again. And what happens is sometimes with films, they'll say, we need to reshoot this scene or we need to do that. And I worked on a movie called Young Einstein with Yahoo Serious.
Great film.
In 1984, which didn't come out till 1988. And it literally was, I'll see you at the reshoot. Mm-hmm. I'll see you at the revoice. I'll see you at the re-this. Because it got refilmed and bits did this and bits changed. So,
yeah.
So what did you do after that then?
Since 2000, I've been writing with Steph, so we write full time, and not all things get produced. But I worked on a few Best Men with him. He's currently doing one I didn't work on. And so for basically 17 years, we've been a tight writing partnership. But
do you get jealous when Stefan works on other things and it's like, oh, it's not a Sheridan Job and Stefan project? Is it like that?
No. The one he's doing at the moment, I think it's called Flammable Children, certainly that's the working title for it,
yeah,
is a fantastic piece. I mean, it's, he is such a talented writer, and that is very personal to him, that one, even though it's black comedy. So it wouldn't be appropriate for me to be writing that one. But
so you've written this book, so Wish You Were Here.
Yeah, I used the opportunity to write my own memoir.
And I knew that because I was visiting my wife's auntie in Switzerland, and of course as things happen, I get this email from you or text saying, I hear you're in Switzerland. Yes. I was in Geneva.
That's where I'm living. I mean, it's the weird thing about, you know, European countries. Switzerland is as big as Victoria. So to say you're in Switzerland is a bit like, I can drive there. I'd go there for a B&S. I'll certainly go there for, you know.
I know. And it was the day we were leaving and it was like, oh, thanks very much for the day we're leaving. It's like, I'm in Switzerland too. It is incredible though. It's like we were sort of right near Lake Geneva, visiting my wife's auntie Kerry, who was fantastic. Yeah. And, it was like, oh, well, let's drive to France. And it's kind of like, you just can't get your head. Oh, we're going to go to Italy and pick up some wine or whatever. It's like literally down the road. There's no actual borders. There's just where the border used to be and you can drive through and she gets her groceries in one country and gets her wine in another country and goes to the butcher in another country.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just weird. And also Geneva's a big country town. Basically 5 minutes and you're in France, but also 5 minutes and you're in fields of beauty, sunflowers.
Fields of sting.
Yeah, it's true.
Fields
yeah.
of gold. But the thing is, it's also an amazing place where all these giant World Bank and the United Nations and all those kind of people hang out. So there's a lot of serious people having meetings in places.
It's true. And they've got CERN as well. So, you know, looking for the Higgs boson. And so a great big scientific community, great big NGO community with the Red Cross headquarters. The Red Cross started there and UNHCR and so on. And my husband got a job there, basically, and he works in high tech and he's working for the World Economic Forum, who convenes Davos.
And he's Welsh.
He's Welsh, yeah. Nothing's one thing in this but I mean, I think that's the Australian way. There's this whole global thing about immigrants and stuff, and it's like every now and then I have to kind of put my hand up and go, I'm an immigrant.
Yeah, we're all immigrants. Yeah. We're all somewhere. We're all bumping into each other in different parts of the world. I think that's what makes it more fun, actually, because you suddenly go, wherever you go, you'll find New Zealanders and Australians.
Yeah,
it's
true.
And you'll hear the accent.
Occasionally Canadians, too.
Yeah, Canadians. And then they all get upset because Canadians are constantly being asked if they're from America.
Yeah, it's just polite to ask them if they're from Canada. The Americans don't mind so much.
And the Americans say, where's that?
Yeah.
Is that the country that's up above us somewhere?
Yeah, those nice people who say please and thank you.
So, so what was the thing that to write this book? Why did you do it?
Well, it's a story that's been a long time in the making. And the first time I did it, it was just at a point in my life where things weren't working out. Like I'd been doing the IVF, the relationship failed, everything wasn't going well, and I had a moment where there was just nothing. And I'd got up at 4 o'clock in the morning and I was bees in my head. I was so angry and I reached into the cupboard to make a Horlicks, put myself back to sleep and be a good girl.
A Horlicks.
Suddenly
we've gone back 3 centuries.
Yeah,
I thought I'd make myself a Horlicks.
1934.
I lit the candle.
Yeah. And the cupboard was open out the back and it was, I knocked the, I mean, seriously, this is like the butterfly that flaps its wings.
It was in Australia.
Right, right. Yeah. Yep. And I knocked the teacups knocked, and out the other end of the cupboard, several feet away fell a glass that I like. It split into two and I just thought I'll stick it back together. And when I went to do it, I opened the drawer and it was just full of broken, chipped, cracked things. And I thought, oh, you know, I threw it on the floor and I smashed it. And then I started to pull out all these things. I'm never going to fix these things. Everything's broken, 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 broken. And actually the act of just getting rid of it, just destroying it, I felt great. And I went back to sleep, slept deeply and well, woke up with like angels in my head, cleaned it all up.
And that's even before you had the Horlicks.
I'd never even got the Horlicks. I was Horlick deprived. Stepped out of the landing of the block of flats where I lived, holding my two bags of lady broken crockery, into a neighbour who with great tenderness said, "Are you all right in there?" And I thought, I just broke every plate and saucer in the house at 4 o'clock in the morning. I went, I'm good. And he said, "Well, if you need anything, let me know." And I just thought, I've got to change something. I need a new start. And into that moment, the word America came, and I just thought, like, I'd grown up with it. I'd grown up with the sitcoms and the, you know, Get Smart and all of this. And I
thought, Thelma and Louise.
Well, absolutely. I'm going to buy me. And so a friend helped me to pay for it, but I basically cashed in my savings, went to L.A. I bought a big red Chevy Camaro, an 89, you know, favored in certain quarters for drive-by shootings. And I just started to drive. So I drove across America. I made a little stopover to visit a mutual friend, in fact, Michelle McKenzie.
Oh, yeah.
And she was studying with a Welsh philosopher. And we had a little holiday fling, a misunderstanding. He thought I invited him on this journey of self-discovery, quit his job, and joined me in Washington. And our third date was 6 weeks in a Chevy Camaro in a tent driving across America.
And that's the Welsh philosopher that you ended up shacking up with.
Yeah. So he's, you know, he's the one who took me to Switzerland. So it's basically a rom-com memoir of, you know, when things aren't going right, sometimes the best thing happens for you.
Well, Amanda Keller says, it's raw, hilarious and wise. This wild ride will have you crying with laughter.
Yeah.
So that's a good way to be crying with laughter.
Yeah.
So how much of it is real? How much of it is writer's embellishment? How much of it did you leave out and how much bits did you leave in?
There's a lot of lies by omission.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stories that aren't mine to tell. So I wrote some of it on the road, so it's got the rawness of the moment and all of that. But ultimately, I wrote it as an anniversary present for my husband. He's not the first. He's not the first husband.
I think I remember the first husband. I think we all worked with the first husband.
Love the first husband. He's not the first husband. Well. And I think when you're not the first, sometimes you need to know how important you are. And I wanted to tell him who he was and what he meant to me. So I wrote it as a love letter for him. Found myself giving it to girlfriends who were having a hard time and wanted to cheer them up.
Yeah.
You know, people who couldn't have a holiday because they weren't well. And it got a good response. So when we moved to Switzerland, I basically rewrote it as a commercial project, found an agent, found a publisher with a firm press who've been wonderful, gave me a great editor who'd edited Almost French and Holy Cow, and turned it into something that's a great holiday read or a feel good thing. It's got weight in it, but it's basically a feel good happy ending rom com memoir.
And do you think it's got the potential to be a telly movie or a feature film?
Oh, yeah, of course I do. I think it'd make a great 4-part miniseries. You know,
parts.
Yeah. I think what's the Little Big Lies that was on recently? Yeah, I think it's in that sort of that. I mean, she's a genius, but you know, I think it could be that good. Yeah.
And even the fabulous late great Mark Colvin has written a thing on the back saying an absolutely riveting read, hilarious and moving simultaneously.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you see, he was married to Michelle, so he features in it. He basically doxed himself with that recommendation, but I'd given him an advance copy when he was in hospital, and that was, you know, as a new author himself, he knew the value of a kind quote, so I think that was his parting gift to me, which I'm really touched by.
Mark also left the world an amazing list of songs, or like a song list, which I got an email from Michelle McKenzie, his our friend and his widow, and she put me onto his list of music that, because like all of us, from our age group and younger and older, you have like certain songs that you love, and you kind of go, oh wow. I tell you the terrible thing, I've been to so many funerals and good funerals and bad funerals, but I'm for always thinking of songs. Oh, that'd be good. I might put that one on my funeral list. That's going to be played at my funeral, like a bit of Warren Zevon or, you know, Your Mother Should Know by the Beatles or Bring Me Sunshine from Morecambe and Wise.
I think you should just release the album. I don't think you should die ever.
Oh,
I
think, right.
You know,
he's not dead, but here's the album.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I like about what Mark Colvin did. He sort of left this amazing song list of all his favourite tunes.
Yeah, you can play them on Spotify, can't
Absolutely.
You? He's got them all lined up.
So, Ryan, should we play a tune and come back and have more of a chat with Sheridan Jobbins and talk more about the book, Wish You Were Here? And I think this is something that, well, it's an album that came out last year. At the moment, I'm loving the new Paul Kelly album, but also this is James Taylor. This is the first studio album he's done for like 10 years or something, and it's called Before This World. Have a listen to this one. It's a great song about driving down a stretch of highway, and it's all about driving down a stretch of highway in America. So it's kind of fits in nicely with Wish You Were Here. So enjoy. It's Talkin' Lifestyle with me, John O'Coleman, The Good Life, and we'll come back and talk to Sheridan Jobbins about her book in a moment.
I was born. Again, yes, I am. Grew up some kind of troubling man. Sunday morning, packed my thing. Said so long, sweet potato. Town too. People pick me right on to the loom and down the loom. Just for example, looking yonder over there. Chicago got the finest high tech first class food hang anywhere. When
Isn't that a great song?
Yeah.
He's a new performer that some of our listeners may have heard of. He's James Taylor. Have you heard of James Taylor?
Yeah.
I've seen Fire and I've seen Rain.
I've
dated Carol King and I'm still the same. Actually, it's amazing when you think that James Taylor and Carol King were an item. They were married, I think, actually.
Yeah. And two of the greatest songwriters ever.
Yeah. And now Carol King's got her own musical called Beautiful, I'm supposed to go and see, which is getting rave reviews.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, and it has had rave reviews, and I'd love to see it.
And it's quite amazing when you think two people like that, they write a song together called You've Got a Friend, or I think she wrote it, and she wrote it for him, or he wrote it for her, and they said, this is a fantastic song, let's put it on both our albums, and it was a hit on a James Taylor album and a hit on a Carole King album.
I just love your knowledge of music, it's exceptional.
Well, it makes up for the things that I didn't listen to when I was at school, and when they were saying, okay, everybody take out your maths book and turn to page 27, Pythagoras.
I don't know much about chemistry or whatever.
Don't know much about algebra, etc. Yes, I know more about music and bands and movies that I've seen. It is funny. What were you good at school? Because I remember before Wonderworld, there's actually a clip of you on YouTube doing Cooking with Sherry.
Fantastic.
When you were about 9 or 10 or 7 or something.
I held the Guinness World Record for 30 years for the youngest host of their own show.
Really?
Yeah. Original celebrity chef. Yes, you keep it in your back pocket.
So what channel was that on?
That was on Network 10.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I think. I was 9. Let's just do the maths on that one. So the part of those original celebrity chefs at the same as, well, there was Flo, somebody, there was the Galloping Gourmet.
The Galloping Gourmet, who was originally from New Zealand, and his name was,
Graham Kerr.
The Galloping Gourmet. Yeah. And he came to Australia and signed up with Harry and Miller, who said, I'm going to make you a star.
And he was did. Right. Yeah, he did. Yeah.
I think Graham Kerr, the Galloping Gourmet, is still alive.
Right.
But he got hugely famous in America and then had a huge amount of heart problems because he was always cooking with huge amounts of butter and lard.
And cream. And
now he is a changed man and, as far as I know, still alive, but does incredibly healthy, fine food still, but using, 900% less fat and butter and all the things that we like.
Yeah, well, that's the modern times, isn't it?
When you started on Simon Townsend's Wonderworld, or even before that, did you always want to be a journalist or be on TV or?
I think when I started, my first wish was always to be a writer. Like I was playing on the typewriter before I could do it, but I suffered from dyslexia and my writing always looked crap, and Simon was always sending even my little things that you write for him to say, he was always sending them back sort of correcting the spelling.
Oh, like the introductions.
Yeah, those introductions.
Sheridan Jobbins has been out to find out why people use toothbrushes for far too long. Those sorts of things.
Those ones, yeah.
Stop it, Woody.
Have you ever wondered why?
Yeah.
I got cross once and I sent him a note that was kind of firm about something, pay probably, maybe. But anyway, and he sent it back saying, you didn't write this because it was perfectly spelled. It was, plainly the adrenaline of fury, so it was a long time before I ended up doing on-camera stuff because it didn't matter how I spelled it or whether my grammar was right. But I had an auntie who was a Montessori teacher and she basically used summer holidays to teach me how to read and write, so.
Wow, because it's funny how many people that I've met over the years who, probably including myself, are slightly have trouble writing things, or you can write things down but you get an idea and you're writing it so fast or typing it so fast that it comes out gobbledygook or mixed up or phonetically spelled.
Yeah, the best thing I ever did was learn to touch type, and I can now type almost as fast as I think, so I can sort of half keep up with it.
Really? I know a lot of writers who are big believers in those things you speak into.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying Sheridan Jobbins came into the radio show and we talked about Wish You Were Here, her book, and blah, 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 and it just writes down what you say in words.
I reckon that'd be really good for you. I think you're a really good storyteller, naturally. I'm somebody who does it with kind of like a hammer and tongs, and I write it the first time, and then I go back and work it out.
So does that make sense? How can you write with a hammer and tongs? Wouldn't you write with a hammer and a nail? Hammer and nails. What would you use the tongs for?
I think it's a metalworking illusion rather than a carpentry.
She went at me with hammer and tongs. Sounds sounds like something from Many, Many Shades of Grey.
Yeah, well.
I looked at her with hammer and tongs. Or it's a legal company that you ring up. Good morning, hammer and tongs. I'm sorry, hammer's in a meeting. Shall I take a message and put you through to tongs? We'll take a break and we'll be back with more of this mindless babble.
I really enjoy the show. I'm a real convert to lifestyle.
That interview was absolutely uplifting.
It's so different. You're a breath of fresh air.
Talking lifestyle.
I'm loving this. It's just up my alley.
Helping you get the best out of life. Out on the verge
of the rest of our life. Thank you for the best subject.
It's made my day.
So enjoying that conversation.
Whoever rings in, you always give them great advice.
There's more to life with Talking Lifestyle.
BT knows the work that accountants do is critical to the success of a client's self-managed super fund, and that's why BT Panorama works with you to deliver a smart and simple way to manage SMSFs. BT Panorama can help streamline SMSF administration and compliance. It gives your clients access to more than 2,400 investments. BT Panorama integrates information to and from accounting software to give you a complete portfolio view. And the year-end process can be simple and efficient with access to tax and investment reports on demand. Accountants, learn more at btpanorama.com.au.
BT Portfolio Services Limited, AFSL 233715, is the issuer of BT Panorama Investments. You should consider whether or not BT Panorama Investments is appropriate for you. Consider the investor guide at panorama.com.au before making a decision.
Unlock more on the BMW X5 xDrive 30D with over $15,000 worth of extras, including innovations package and free scheduled servicing for 4 years or 60,000 kilometres. Visit your preferred BMW dealer. Terms and conditions apply.
For the first time in 40 years, the voice of rock, Glenn Hughes, performs classic Deep Purple, live and loud in concert. Witness one of hard rock's finest singers fronting a hand-picked band as he revisits some of Deep Purple's all-time greatest songs. Get ready, Sydney, September 20, State Theatre. Book now at Ticketmaster. ClassicDeepPurpleLive.com.
I did
because my wife made me, but I'm glad I did. All those amazing natural nutrients I didn't know I needed, and now I have more energy than I know what to do with. My wife says I should clean out the garage.
Give Nature Bee a go. It's only $59.95 for 3 months supply, and you get an extra month supply for free, plus free postage. Call 1-800-147-009 or order online at naturebee.com.
This is The Good Life.
Everybody get up.
On Talking Lifestyle. For all shows, pictures, podcasts and competitions, go to talkinglifestyle.com.au.
I was just chastising Ryan again, because I was talking to Sheridan off the air and we were talking about our mums, and Sheridan's mum is 90 today.
Yeah. Yes, she is. Happy birthday, Ma.
So happy birthday. What's her first name?
Joy Jobbins.
Joy Jobbins. Yeah. It sounds like something that, like a character from a book.
I think her parents wanted a name that Australians wouldn't shorten, so of course we call her Joy Bell or the Empress.
Yes, the Empress Jobbins. Joy Jobbins, 90 years young today.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to Joy. And what did you do to celebrate her 90th?
Well, it was actually the day of the... We just launched the book,
yeah.
Mine, but also she's written one as well. She's written a memoir. She's done the second instalment of three,
wow,
called Life at the Palace. And she still works 4 days a week for a charity.
So which charity does she work for?
She works for the DFWA, which is... the Defence Workers Federation of Australia, if I've got that right. So they help return defence workers get pensions or recognition, or kids and widows to be,
fantastic,
you know, servicemen looking after their men still.
And so is she living at home still?
Yeah, totally independent, drives to work, you know, buses us all around, makes us run like little ponies.
So she's 90 years old and she's driving, because I was with the legendary disc jockey and host of many, many radio and TV shows, Bob Rogers, on
fabulous
Sunday with Jerry Rogers and Bob Rogers, and they were playing Scrabble, and he comes in to do his radio show on 2CH in Sydney every day. He's 91 and he drives in here and drives home again. I just don't know if I'd want to be I'm in my very late 50s. I'm in my extremely late 50s. One could almost say 60, but, I don't think I want to drive until, I don't think I should be allowed to drive over the age of 80.
I don't think there's any evidence that people over 65 drive worse than people over 27.
I'm this age and I drive pretty badly already. Yeah,
but do you drive fast or slow?
I drive fast.
Yeah, you see, that's the real problem. It's not your age. Yeah, I think my mum could probably hit something and not do any damage at that speed.
Apart from to herself.
Oh, I don't even know then, maybe, unless the airbag went off. No, I mean, she's a safe driver in that she's slow and she doesn't go out of her menu.
The trouble is that there's so many cars on the road, whether you're in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, that, you know, it's very hard to find a quiet road, apart from maybe driving to Adelaide. For an older person to drive, you know, leisurely. I mean, I work with Jessica Rowe, and she drives.
I don't know why that's funny, but something about it's so stupid.
Jessica Rowe drives like she's 90.
Right.
I've been behind her at the lights, and the light changes to green, and she still sits there.
Oh, no.
In one of those giant tractors called a Volvo.
It is infuriating. Mum drove me to the airport once, and we running late, so my heart was just going, please go fast, please go. Yeah. 40 miles below the speed limit. Yeah, miles, it was that long ago. And Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody came on, and Oscar, my nephew, and I were in the car, and so we were doing the full headbanging at about 40 k's an hour on the freeway, you know, scaramouche, scaramouche.
So that's why I reckon I would prefer to always get a taxi to the airport if I'm going anywhere, because then you can be more... Can we just go a little bit faster, because, you know, you're in a cab or an Uber or whatever it is, and I would always feel better doing that to someone rather than having to... I remember when my dad got older, he used to drive more casually. And I'd be going, can we go a little bit faster? And there'd be people going, me, 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 driving fast. So it's a wonderful thing, old age, but I think I wouldn't inflict myself on the drivers of Australia over the age of 70 or 75 or 80. But then again, that's me talking now.
Yeah. Her driving's a lot better since she had her cataracts fixed.
Oh, there you go. Does she drive? She drives a Cadillac?
Yeah, pretty much.
So I have my ears fixed. She's driving a Cadillac? No, she has cataracts. What? No, the cataracts are further down. You need to take a right there.
Yeah, down in the dam.
So when you did your Wish You Were Here book,
yes.
did you take on board lots of, when you said you had an editor and people like that, a lot of journalists and a lot of writers of books get very sort of touchy about having to change anything.
No, I'm the other person. I'm the one who is so grateful for a fresh brain and, you know, a talent. The woman who was the editor is Fiona Henderson. They're books you mightn't have read, but Almost French and Holy Cow are two classic
Australians.
I remember
Holy Cow. Because Holy Cow, wasn't that a Kathy Lett book or wasn't it?
Sarah, you've done it to me now.
Doesn't matter. Just say Sarah Brightman.
Yeah. No,
someone can call in later.
No, I think it's Sarah.
Sarah Ferguson. Just say Sarah Ferguson.
Yes. It is meaningful. I think it's McDonald.
Sarah McDonald.
Let's hope it is.
She's got a fast food restaurant.
She also has a radio show on Saturday night somewhere.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of her. Yeah,
she's a really good writer. I'm so embarrassed.
Holy cow, I have heard of that. Actually.
Yeah, it's really good. Anyway, so the first time, the first set of notes, because there were more than one, was 641 suggested changes.
Wow.
I didn't count. I had the little machine that told me how many there were.
Do you make the changes yourself?
Yeah. And of those 641, 600 were probably typos because, you know, see earlier discussion about dyslexia.
Yeah.
But the other 41 were all, they were structural and they were important and they were about grace and, you know, attitude and I think they made it a much better book.
What about, because there's a lot of humour in this book, did you take direction when people say, I like the joke about when the doorknob fell off, or the bit about forgetting to buy the so-and-so or running out of gas or petrol. Did you sort of go, well, no, I love that joke. That's got to stay in.
I think there's one quite early on, and I've forgotten what it is, but it involves a piece of 4B2, which apparently the younger readers didn't know what that was.
A 4B2, yeah.
What a piece of 4B2 was. So for the most part, they didn't mess with the jokes. Right. No, they liked that bit. It was more to do with how America was viewed, and some of the journey was quite a while ago, so all of us wanted to keep it contemporary. So yeah. If you chose to follow the route, that it would still exist.
All right. So people who used to write about Route 66, I remember when Jules Holland or even Robbie Coltrane did the drive along Route 66, they actually said that some of those routes are now not available anymore. Or they're available, but it's not the main route anymore.
That's right. And it's been decommissioned and you can't do it. And it never went the whole way.
Oh, really?
It finished in Chicago. Things I learned on the way.
Chicago.
But things like, do you remember Pee Wee Herman's Big Adventure where he goes past I did a pilgrimage to the dinosaur. Well, all of that's gone. Like, there's just a dinosaur and it's in a pen and it looks really lonely. So I ended up cutting that out because I didn't want to recommend people.
So it's actually legit things that you recommend going to Graceland or going to this place or that way.
And my experience of them as well. When you were saying about did I change things or there are some things that changed. Some people have been blended. Some people didn't want to be in it and fair enough too. So I've kind of mollified that so that the drama lives. But one of the big things for me was the places that you go and how they're experienced. So.
The amazing thing about writing a book, because I'm sort of semi going through the process myself with another author. We're writing it together.
Great.
So basically I'm writing the stories and then he's making them less deranged. And
I don't know, that's a good thing.
There's still the deranged bits, and then it has to be legaled. But I'm doing it with Larry Buttrose, who wrote the original the story of Lion, which became the movie.
Is he Ita Buttrose's brother?
I think Ita Buttrose's nephew. And so Larry's done lots of stuff, and he used to run comedy clubs and things like that. It's quite funny sitting with someone like that and coming up with all these stories that from my past, that's an interesting thing. And then changing things or then saying, oh, well, I think that's not relevant, or I don't want to mention that person because they're not dead yet.
Yeah. Well, it's a real thing. I do a lot of work with Steph, who likes to take the fact and make a story out of it. And as a former journalist, I find that quite confronting. If you're doing a drama, that's kind of okay. So, to the best of my ability, it may not be factual, but it's true.
Mm.
And I've certainly put a lot of words in people's mouths where I've either paraphrased what they've said or just given them something nice to say.
It's funny though when you see a movie, because I'm more of a movie viewer than a book reader. So people have said, oh, have you read so-and-so? And I'll say, no, but I saw the film.
Or I listened to it in the car.
Yeah, that's right. I've heard the talking book when...
I played it fast.
When Stephen Fry did all the...
Harry Potters.
All the Harry Potters. Yeah. He made a lot of money out of that, but he has a fantastic way of reading those Harry Potter books.
Yeah, no, I've done a long journey with my nephew to Harry Potter.
All right. Yeah. Well, actually, Stephen Fry's spoken word books. In fact, he lost a lot of weight because he said, because I did the QI, a series of QIs with Stephen Fry and Alan Davis. And I said, so you've lost a huge amount of weight. And he said, all I did was every morning I would put on an audio book and go out for a walk and listen to someone reading a book.
Right, great.
And before I knew it, it was an hour and a half or 2 hours later.
I thought,
what a great idea.
Yeah, I love the podcasts for that too. Mm-hmm. And the radio.
Oh, it'll never catch on, this whole radio thing and the internet.
The wireless.
Just for the kids. The wireless. It's more about, you know, information and things like that. So do you think now that you've got the book out there, Wish You Were Here, which is available, Sheridan Jobbins is my guest, by the way, do you think you've got another book? And you know how they say, I've definitely got a book in me. Everyone's got a book in them. It's just a question of whether you want to get it out or not.
Or how forcibly you want to get it out. Yeah, I do. There's certainly one that I'm writing already, but also when I was deciding which one of the things, I had 101 unfinished projects. So I basically ordered them into how much work was involved, but which ones I thought would be more appealing to a wider audience. And that was the one that came first.
101 unfinished projects, like a Beatles album, Paul McCartney's got a bit of a song, John Lennon's got a, were these 101 unfinished ideas for books or for movies or for TV shows?
Some of them were inchoate little pieces of nothing, and some were finished film scripts, half-written books, researched but not completed. That was, for instance, completed second draft, but I hadn't you know, so that was also a forerunner. 2 years ago, my mum broke her ankle in Berlin, and I know it doesn't sound very funny, but it was like 6 weeks in an East Berlin hospital, and the only book I had to read was How to Be a Stand-Up Comic.
Ah. And who was that by? I bet it was by one of those American stand-up comics.
It was a female American stand-up comic, and it had little exercises, so every morning I'd do these exercises and then go to the hospital and sort of do six rounds with somebody trying to cut a foot off. And I think that might actually be the next one, because even though it doesn't sound like a great pitch yet, it was very funny and it was about family and survival and old people.
What about the way, you know, you've worked with Stefan on movies and things, and I can't believe the amount of time people put into getting a movie up and getting funded and all that kind of stuff. You know, when you look at things like La La Land, which I loved as a movie, but when you realize it took them 6 or 7 years to get that funded, and they basically, he only got that funded because Whiplash, his first film about the jazz drummer, got funded and got an Academy Award. And it was like, then suddenly Hollywood goes, hey, what was that other idea you had that we said no to about 7 years ago?
Yeah.
What about the idea that all these people like Stefan and yourself and hundreds of Australian filmmakers are banging away, banging their heads to try and get a movie made? And then, okay, a magic light happens. The movie gets made. They have to make changes. They have to do the different casting things. Maybe you're not going to get Hugh Jackman, but you'll get the next Hugh Jackman or whatever. And then people, the movie comes out and it lasts for a week or 2 weeks and everyone goes, oh, it was terrible. I just can't believe that someone, and I've done it myself, you'll see a movie and you'll kind of go, I can't believe it. I was so excited and looking forward to a movie and it turns out to be, you know,
or the other way, where you think it's great and it disappears as well for whatever reason. I mean, 7 years isn't long from beginning to end for a film. They can take twice that and...
That could be a whole person's career at the bank.
Yeah, well, it could be a whole person's whole career in filmmaking as well. You might only get one shot at it.
Yeah.
I think you're passionate about things, you're passionate about it. And often you do other things in between. You might be doing commercials or documentaries or, you know, something else to keep alive.
I'm just amazed at the passion of filmmakers and that how many, like last week, seven feature films came out in Australia.
Wow.
Most of them were made overseas, mostly American films or English films. But it's just incredible. You think seven films are going to come out, maybe one or two of those will get an audience, or three, maybe.
Yeah, and also maybe one in a year you'll remember as well. Mm. Like how many films that actually stay with you.
Or how many films are actually derivative of a version of, it's kind of like The Hangover, but it's a girl's version of The Hangover.
I can guarantee you that was the pitch.
Yeah, yeah. remember when they, last year, or maybe it was this year, but I think it was last year, they did Ghostbusters again. It was the ladies' version of Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I quite liked it. And did you see it?
No.
You're a Ghostbusters fundamentalist.
I like Ghostbusters, the original one, and I just, they're making a movie version of Knight Rider now, that's the next one, and now they're also doing, Jeffrey Rush is doing a new version of Storm Boy.
Wow.
I think in South Australia. Right. But I just think that it's great when certain movies, like Flatliners, they've done a new version of Flatliners. It seems to me that Hollywood and, you know, wherever they make movies these days, they're kind of a bit like they've run out of ideas.
Well, I think people like certainty in business, and you don't always get certainty in creative endeavors. So if you're going to put $20 million or $120 million, you kind of want some proof that it's going to work. It's like, do you know John Green? He does young adult novels. He did Paper Towns, and he's like suddenly out of the blue, this mysterious guy. Well, like if you're into young adult, he's like a god. And he's all over the internet, and he's fantastic.
Is he the guy that will write? There's a guy that we had on Studio 10 who's this incredibly young guy who writes sort of action, like Boise action books, and it's always like Ice Station Zebra or so-and-so this, or it's like Battle of the So-and-Sos.
I'm not sure it's him. This guy does sort of more internal things about, you know, people dying.
Oh.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun.
It sounds like fun, but it works really well. I'm not here to sell his work because he's a multimillionaire, but he's a wonderful young adult writer.
No, it's incredible that there are guys that they find a niche in the market and they just go bang, 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 bang. And then, and that just, because people say, oh, no one's reading books these days, which isn't true because.
Well, I think the more people are reading them at the moment, I think they're easier to buy, easier to find. But it's also the imagination you get to put somebody else's brain on for a while. Like if you can't go on holiday or you're stuck or, it's just fantastic to have that escape.
Do you read lots of other people's books?
Yeah, I'm a big reader.
See, I'll go and see movies. And I'll buy books when I go on holidays and I'll start them and I'll read maybe 20 pages or 15 pages on a plane.
You know, if it doesn't hold you, that's completely valid. It's not a duty. You don't have to do it. But I imagine you're kind of an energetic sort of thinker as well.
Oh, that's right. When I go on those extreme holidays.
Yeah.
So, it's really hard to hold a book when you're rock climbing.
Yeah, extreme ironing.
Extreme ironing. I did extreme ballooning. And
extreme TV
I
watching.
I did extreme TV. I did extreme laying down by the side of a pool. I did extreme being rolled back in the water by Greenpeace people who thought it was a beached whale.
No.
Keep him. They just kept saying things like, keep him damp, put another towel over the top of him, then we can roll him back in when the tide comes up.
You can sue for that.
Yeah, I liked it. It was fun. It was the most attention I've ever had on a holiday. Roll the big whale back in the water. That's not a whale, that's my dad. Oh, dearie.
Keep him wet.
Keep him wet, keep him damp, keep him hydrated. So what's the idea for you, Sheridan Jobbins, of your perfect day off, your perfect time off? Is it reading other people's books? Is it just sitting there in Geneva and looking out the window? Or?
Oh, look, Geneva's great for writing. There's almost nothing to do there.
No, you that's know. True. And it's very expensive to go to dinner from what I remember.
I've become a very good cook because of Geneva. It was bound to happen that after even having my own show, So a perfect day. I do love traveling with my husband, so it doesn't matter whether it's a train, a car, a plane, or a sailboat. That's wonderful. I have no experience of sailing with my husband.
Or
I don't
Welsh,
know why I added that.
Welsh ponies.
Yeah, well, little Welsh ponies. They're underrated and quite ferocious. A late start, breakfast in bed, reading a book, going to a crap market, buying second-hand goods, finding things that are weird. I do love that. He calls them crap markets. I call them antiques.
They have a lot of markets in that sort of that area of Switzerland.
Yeah, all those transient people leaving their stuff behind, There's tons of them.
And beautiful fruit and vegetables.
Yeah, great markets.
Local things.
Yeah, and cows with bells.
The cows with the bells.
Yeah, we are the country. We Swiss, that brought chocolate box. Yeah, with those pictures. You drive through the country and you're just going through chocolate
books. I thought
for
a minute you were living in Julie Andrews' house.
Well, pretty much.
Here's our life. With the sound. Was that Switzerland?
Well, it's Austria, but it's Austria. On the border. Yeah, that's where they were going. Yeah.
You know me. I wasn't there at World War II. I wouldn't have been any good. I would have annexed the wrong country.
Right, yeah. Shut your von Trapp.
Here we are in Poland. No, this is Austria.
Oh, Czechoslovakia, man. So sorry.
Wrong hat. Well, listen, best of luck with the book.
Thank you.
And if people want to find it, where can they go? Any good reputable bookshop?
Any reputable bookshop, but also Big W.
Big W?
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped about this.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the way to flog books.
Yeah.
You can get them at the checkout at Big W. So, if you want to find out more about it, is there a website to find out what Sheridan Jobbins is up to?
Yeah, SheridanJobbins.com exists, but, the book is Affirm Press if you want to know where else to buy it. Affirm Press.
And it's spelt AFMIRM, like affirm, like affirmative, Affirm Press. Yeah. It's called Wish You Were Here. And I dedicate it to you, the listeners of Talking Lifestyle. It's a damn good read. Even though I've only read bits of it, but I will have a proper read. I'll get Margot to read it to me. Bedtime stories.
I think that's the way to go.
Well, it makes a change from the wheels on the bus go round and round, round and round. I still have that one. Yeah, I like that one. Sheridan Jobbins, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Continued success.
Delightful to see you again.
Give my love.